Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, and welcome back. You know who it is, Dr. Spencer here, Dr. Carl. And we're going to go over a cool trial that just came out, the, what is it, SURMOUNT-OSA, yep. SURMOUNT Obstructive Sleep Apnea Trial. We talked about, I believe, the headlines, maybe a month
when
or two.
When it was released, probably.
But basically, they're looking at the treatment of obstructive sleep apnea and obesity, mind you, both of them
obesity
together.
Complicated by sleep apnea, I would
complicated
say.
Complicated, I would say.
Whatever. It's an obesity-related disorder.
People with obesity and sleep apnea.
Yeah.
Treatment with tirzepatide, which is the brand name, is Zepbound. Some people may know it as Mounjaro. That's the type 2 diabetes branded version. But this is technically Zepbound. Same peptide, same doses and everything. So they just announced this at the ADA.
Yep, the American Diabetes Association, and published in the New England Journal of Medicine simultaneously this past weekend.
And well, just real quick, I think they're going to be gunning to get this approved for obstructive sleep apnea. So we'll go over the results right here, but essentially they gave those with obesity and obstructive sleep apnea either placebo or tirzepatide looked at what happened.
Different trials. So yeah, a little background though. So obstructive sleep apnea, you know, for people who don't know, it's characterized by disordered breathing during sleep. You know, people might think of it as snoring, although not all snoring is obstructive sleep apnea, but you think about people who don't wake up refreshed after a good night's sleep, maybe falling asleep during the day. Those are some of my common questions that go along with some of the questionnaires that we have that are validated for sleep apnea. And, you know, if you remember the look-ahead trial, which was obesity with type 2 diabetes and intensive lifestyle therapy to try to reduce cardiovascular events, over 80% of those patients with obesity and type 2 diabetes had obstructive sleep apnea. And a lot of other data show very similar. And so, you know, we know from all these previous studies that weight reduction efforts reduces the risk of sleep apnea. So for example, in that sleep ahead trial with intensive lifestyle therapy, there was a little bit of improvement. They improved diabetes and all those other things, but the only cardiovascular risk reduction was in those who maintained, you know, some 10% weight reduction. Remember that? Well, it was kind of similar for sleep apnea benefits. So the sleep apnea benefits in that trial were really related to the amount of weight reduction. So on average, in the first year, it was like 11% versus 1% weight loss. And the decrease in something we need to talk about, the apnea hypopnea index, was about 10 events per hour.
Yeah, I think it's important to know, though, just if you have sleep apnea, you're tired during the day. It's a miserable thing. You're like, I'm getting plenty of sleep. And then you wake up tired. Of course,
you feel tired all day.
You should always get evaluated by a sleep doctor because there could be some other sleep disorders going on, whatever. But like, if you have obesity, larger neck, you kind of snore and your partner will say, yeah, looks like they are, they stop breathing.
But not all the time.
But not always. Yeah. Not always. There could be kind of like this subclinical that you wouldn't even notice. But it's not just energy levels during the day. There are some other complications you can get from it. You can get resistant secondary hypertension may not be as responsive even to certain medications. And we'd like to fix the root cause if possible.
Yeah. And it's a vicious cycle with everything too. It's not only blood pressure, but type 2 diabetes, insulin sensitivity, glucose metabolism, and certainly drives cardiovascular disease because
heart
of all
failure,
that stuff.
Thickened hearts and all that type of stuff. So a cool trial, and I know drug companies, let's not forget that drug companies are trying to get these medicines, you know, just widely available, widely covered.
We don't get paid by them.
We don't get paid by them.
Not directly. I do get lunches.
However, I think it's a good thing to study because it's like what we go back and forth on is the biggest bang for the buck for these types of medicines. So
speaking of biggest bang for the buck, though, we do need to talk about in the past, we have a ton of data on bariatric surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, huge meta-analyses. Just one I found to cite was over 22,000 patients, and those who had surgery for weight loss had dramatic improvement or even resolution of their sleep apnea in almost 88% of them. So, you know, weight reduction is a very important treatment for obesity and sleep apnea.
We usually talk about the little threshold of what to improve, what comorbidity. So everybody talks about that 3 to 5%. You start getting kind of some of the blood sugar, blood pressure improvements. Really, what is it? 10%?
10% is where we start to see the benefits here. And really for trying to put things into remission, just like type 2 diabetes remission, fatty liver remission, like steatohepatitis, those types of things, 15%. So that's kind of same here. So we really start to see the benefits at 10%. But 15% now is going to start becoming the goal to really get rid of these disorders, or at least put them into states of remission, I think.
Yeah, especially now that we have therapies that go 15 and beyond. The other thing to note is that not everybody with obstructive sleep apnea has obesity, and not everybody with obesity develops obstructive sleep apnea. There may be some other things going on with fat around the airway and neck and just tissue in general.
And other ear, nose, throat issues.
People are talking about, one of our sleep doctor friends, Dr. McConnell, is talking about maybe a topic fat in the tongue, kind of bigger, thicker tongues.
But that may be treated by treating the obesity.
Yeah, maybe. We don't know. We'll see. So I know even when I was big and muscular in college, I'm still relatively muscular, but not as big. But my neck is still pretty big, but like I had an 18-inch
neck.
Your neck
is bigger than mine.
Yeah, we can just measure it.
Relatively speaking.
We'll just pull them out. Like, we'll pull out the measure.
I'm just a lot shorter, though.
Yeah, so he's like my SpongeBob. Anyway, I'm like Squidward. Well, you measure the necks. Anyway, I had an 18-inch neck, and now it's more in probably the 16, 17-inch range. But I think back then it's possible I had a touch of sleep apnea. Definitely. So let's go over the results.
Well, let's talk about what the apnea hypopnea index is, because that really matters for this. So this index that helps grade the severity of sleep apnea is the combined average number of apneas and hypopneas.
You gotta say what is an apnea?
You stop breathing.
It's complete.
Complete stoppage.
Yeah, whereas hypopnea is a subclinical, like a slightly, right? I can't remember exactly.
We probably should have McConnell on here to,
we need to,
you know, detail that a little bit more. But basically, yeah, you're stopping breathing while you're sleeping. And that's the index is how much of that occur per hour of sleep. So according to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, it is categorized into mild, which is 5 to 15 events per hour, moderate, 15 to 30 events per hour, and severe, which is greater than 30 events per hour. So that brings us to the background of this trial. So, you know, you got to kind of understand that when you think about this. So it was actually two phase 3 double-blind randomized controlled trials with adults who had moderate to severe obstructive sleep apnea and obesity. And now, so I think group 1, trial 1, they were using positive airway pressure. So people hear about CPAP machines. That's kind of the common thing people hear about. So they were using, those who had these diseases were using essentially CPAP or some version of that in trial 1. Those were trial 2. Sorry, they were using those at baseline. Those who were not receiving treatment were in trial 1. And so they were randomized 1-to-1, you know, tirzepatide versus placebo, either the max tolerated dose, 10 milligrams or 15 milligrams or placebo over 52 weeks. The AHA, that apnea hypopnea index, was the primary outcome. And the average AHI, I think I said that wrong last time, was about 51.5 and 49.5 respectively in those two trials. The average BMI was 39.
So severe, everybody, well, average of severe. Yeah. I don't know what the lowest they got in there, but...
Yeah. Well, it was all moderate to severe, at least.
Yeah, severe. Pretty much mostly, the average was severe, but if they had to have at least moderate.
Yeah. And so then the weight reduction in these trials on average... In the first trial was 18% weight reduction versus 2% in the diet exercise placebo group. And then in the other one, it was 20% versus 2% in the placebo
which is
exercise group.
This is over 52 weeks because the other Surmount trials were 72 weeks. So this is 20 weeks fewer, and they still got pretty much the amount of weight loss you would see in those trials.
really good weight reduction. And maybe, you know, if we looked at those graphs,
I'd have to look at
they
kind of
they,
over
they tend
overlay
to
overlay it.
Yeah. So if we go here.
Yeah, you gotta.
We can talk about, you know, do they look like they're gonna continue? And it does, you know, they haven't plateaued yet.
They look like it.
So there's still potential room for continued weight reduction and benefits.
Yeah, the Surmount, remember the Surmount 4, I believe it is. I always forget which one it was, but they did it up to 88, like it was 88 mm-hmm. weeks and they continued it. They got up to 25%. I bet these people would continue to lose weight.
Yeah. So, over time. You know, and maybe a little bit slightly better weight reduction with the positive airway
pressure. What was the percentage of female versus male? Because this, what we've seen in the past is that women tend to lose weight, more weight than men for whatever reason on these medicines. I don't know if they have
I don't have
the base. It doesn't matter.
We need the full.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Stuff in there, yeah. But anyways, yeah. So the bottom line is here. So with that dramatic weight reduction, so in trial one, the change in AHI at week 52 was over 25 events per hour with tirzepatide, and the placebo diet exercise group was able to achieve minus 5 events per hour. So a difference of 20 events per hour, that's very clinically meaningful amount. And in the trial two, and these were people with the positive airway pressure, they had a mean change of minus 29 events per hour versus a similar 5.5 events per hour with the placebo diet exercise group.
So the average is going from severe down to mild
or mates, you know, a lot of them, and we'll get more data as they
there is a I believe there's a graph showing complete resolution, those who had actually complete resolution of their sleep apnea. But to put this into comparison, I mean, 20% weight loss, I mean, what everybody's asking right now is like, okay, so of course if we can just get people to lose weight, will they resolve? Is there something else about the medicine that may be helpful? It's really hard to know, because 20% weight loss is where we would start expecting to see what we call fat mass disease and condition improvement. Whereas metabolic improvement, we see all sorts of different physiological things. But the thought is that sleep apnea is mostly from the mass. However, some people believe there might be a metabolic component, and there may be differential storages of where you store that fat. So maybe it's possible these medicines have a more preferential for some of that ectopic fat. It's really hard to know. We'd have to compare it to some sort of intensive light or bariatric surgery. You'd have to look at it very similarly. It's very hard to do those types of studies. Same thing with the heart disease, heart event reductions, like the SELECT trial that we've talked about in the past for heart attacks.
Well, you asked about putting these patients into remission. So their definitions of remission, which is essentially not having any apnea, hypopnea indices.
Fewer than five.
Yeah. Or just a little bit higher with essentially without symptoms. It was basically 14 to 15% in the diet exercise placebo group, and 43% in the study one group with tirzepatide, and almost 52% in the study two group with tirzepatide. So essentially, we're getting half the people into a remissive state.
Yeah. Imagine that.
It's remarkable.
So I posted this on Instagram in my little stories. And of course, I get a lot of messages back. And there were tons of people messaging me and going, oh my God, I actually need another sleep study, because I don't use my CPAP anymore. I feel great. And my, you know, partner's not telling me I'm not snoring anymore. So I, you know, of course those are anecdotes, but this is very rigorous data that's showing it right here, that about half of people will get rid of their sleep apnea from these drugs. Again, they have to have obesity. They have to fit the criteria.
And similar to that, about half the people commenting on your Instagram think you're being paid by Lilly to say that.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, God, I should be. I'm one of their best advocates.
Jeez.
I know.
Anyway, so compare that, let's say, to, you know, the old liraglutide in the SCALE obstructive sleep apnea study. This was the daily shot, coined Saxenda, the lower dose Victoza for type 2 diabetes. You know, certainly much less robust weight reduction. There was a 6 versus 2% weight reduction, which correlated to a minus 12 and minus 6 reduction in the AHI.
Yeah, not amazing.
With Qsymia, which is the brand name for the phenermine topiramate extended release, there was a little bit better weight reduction in their trial, 10 versus 4%. And And in that trial, I think they obviously had a different background, but it was 32 versus 16 fewer.
That's
events.
That's pretty good.
But those are both, but 16 in there was a pretty good intensive lifestyle or something. It was just a different population, but the difference of 16, I think, is probably more relevant. But, you know, but really what we're talking about is treating obesity as the root cause of so many problems, of so many related disorders. And sleep apnea is a big one. I'll tell you, in endocrine clinic, we get so many consults for fatigue, you know, because, you know, I think hormones are sort of a mystery wrapped in a riddle for a lot of people. And so when they can't find other causes of fatigue, they end up getting sent to us. And I tell you, I swear to God, 50% of the people end up actually having more like sleepiness as opposed to, you know, kind of vague fatigue that we try to split those hairs. And I tell you, a lot of times when, you know, we end up having a lot of people with obesity and diabetes, and we treat those as the underlying root issue of their obstructive sleep apnea, which we also get diagnosed. So that's one thing. But then, you know, also on the other hand, that we got to talk about sometime is the females going through menopause have hot flashes and sleep, or sometimes people just have poor sleep. But the point is, we got to get to the root issue here. And a lot of sleep apnea is due to obesity, and obesity drives sleep apnea. And obesity with type 2 diabetes has a very high prevalence of sleep apnea. And, you know, these medications kill several birds with one stone.
So it turns out the fatigue's not from adrenal fatigue. It's actually their underlying cause, which is the obesity. Look, you know, the ADA that the conference we're seeing, we're not there. It'd probably be a good one for us to go to. But
I was there for the leader trial.
A lot of people are pushing this concept of treat the underlying cause, which we have been doing for 10 years. And a lot of really smarter people have been doing it for much longer than we
technically have. Mainstream medicine says to do that. But the quacks hijacked the
well, it's but the ADA, I will say the ADA, they haven't focused on that as much until recently. They in fact, they just launched a new obesity society of some sort, some obesity association. So they're really getting into, let's treat obesity as the underlying cause for all this stuff, which is great. And you know, we didn't have drugs that did these other than Qsymia was pretty good until now. And so now the future
is now.
Retatrutide, by the way. I think they're looking at that for obstructive sleep apnea. And people are just the fat's just melting off people right now. It's insane with that drug. That's the triple G agonist, glucagon, GIP, and GLP.
I still have a feeling that's going to need to be reserved for people with very severe obesity, kind of like some of the medications we have in osteoporosis. And some of that's just purely due to cost. If these were cheap and readily available, the benefits versus the risks would be even, you know, better.
I'm more worried about that drug with just the amount of weight loss occurring.
That's what
that truly may cause some frailty. I don't even know. I'm not even sure.
Lift weights.
For the love of
from
God.
From the ducks who lift
ducks, we're the quacking ducks.
The ducks who lift. Please, for the love of God, strength train. That's do that, and we'll, you know, we're here to help in other ways.
All right. So, bottom line, if you have obstructive sleep apnea with obesity, tirzepatide, there's around a 40-50% or so chance that you'll have remission. If you take tirzepatide, would that be a correct interpretation?
From what I can tell, we'll get a sleep doc on here to dig in further for a part two episode.
If you have family or friends that you're worried about have sleep apnea, and you know they've got also some obesity and overweight, send them this podcast. Make sure you give us a review. Thanks for listening.
Godspeed.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.